Good evening, good evening. Welcome to your, hey, happy Valentine's Day. Happy Valentine's Day. I am going out for a bit of a late dinner with my wife tonight, but we are doing a show first because when it comes to love, there's nothing that comes between me and the greatest audience in the history of the world. Hey, come on. If this is the greatest show in the history world, certainly what I'm aiming for, then you are the greatest audience. And thank you for sticking through with philosophy through thick and thin, highs and lows, platforming and not quite so platforming. So I appreciate you being here. And I am eager and happy and thrilled and excited to take your questions. But before we do that, I want to talk, since we're talking, since it is Valentine's Day, I really, really want to talk about stink. Stink is love. So our immune system as a whole has strengths and weaknesses. It's good at some stuff, not good at other stuff. So there was a study that was done not too long ago. And what they did was they measured everybody's various immune strengths and weaknesses. And then they had them not bathe for a while and then take their sweat, their pheromones, their natural joy juice of Bonerville. And they had the men sniff the women smell and the women sniff the men smell. And they said, which do you find the most attractive? And lo and behold, as evolution or the deity, whichever you prefer at the moment, would have it, or as you would expect, the people who had complementary immune systems, right? So let's, you know, just take a number of 1 to 10, right? Like various immune responses. The people who were missing 3, let's say they had number 3 was their weakest immune response, they were attracted to the people with number 3 as a strong. If you were missing 8, you were attracted to somebody who had an excess of 8. And this is how the immune system stays strong and balanced through reproduction. We are attracted to those who will give us children who have the best spread of immune system responses as a whole. Isn't that amazing? I mean, that's wild to me that that is communicated over smell and pheromones or whatever it is that you want to call them. Ah, but there was an exception, which is why I'm talking about this. So it was about 20% of the people didn't follow this pattern. Everyone did follow this pattern, but there was about 20% of people who didn't follow this pattern, and they couldn't figure out why until they found out that the people who didn't follow this pattern were women on birth control pills. Yeah. So now we've had a couple of generations where women have been on birth control pills, and I'm no scientist, I'm certainly no doctor, but it seems to me interesting, what if we had, since women have been on birth control pills, well, we have a whole bunch of autoimmune disorders, we have excessive allergies, which is the body attacking things that aren't really particularly dangerous, we have a whole bunch of other things. What is the relationship between women unable to choose men based upon pheromones for a strong immune system for their children and rising health issues? Well, if anyone's going to find out about that, if anyone's going to figure that one out, it's going to be the new director of HHS, Juan Robert F. Kennedy Jr., and that is going to be a pretty wild thing to see. SIDS related to vaccines, we'll find out, hopefully. Certainly the VAERS database is going to be improved and expanded because it's under reporting about 1% of vaccine adverse effects. And is it going to be the case? Is it going to be the case that the taxpayer not only funded the creation of COVID-19, but also that the media was paid by the government to promote the propaganda that everyone had everyone fear inject themselves with gene therapy mystery juice? It's going to be interesting to see. And see, we may. I'm not saying we will, but see, we may. There is, of course, a fair amount of somewhat anecdotal, I don't know how well it's been tested, but a woman meets a man, she's on birth control, which of course her body feels pregnant all the time. And so she's on birth control and hormonal, like the pill. And she meets a guy, dates a guy, gets engaged to a guy, gets married to a guy. The whole time she's on hormonal birth control. She's not herself. You don't really meet your woman until she's off the permanent pregnancy, milk the cow, joy juice of infinite egg suppression. And then a year or two, maybe three into getting married, after they've been together for, you know, 3, 4, 5 years, a year or two into getting married, she goes off birth control because they want to have a baby. They want to have babies, want to start their family. She goes off birth control and suddenly she can't stand him. Again, this is somewhat anecdotal. I don't know how much this has been studied. It does seem to be having an effect on relationships. It certainly does seem to be a factor in a not insignificant number of divorces. But she gets off her birth control. She looks at him and can't stand him. She physically does not respond to him. She finds him repulsive because she is herself, really, for the first time since she first went on hormonal birth control. It's pretty wild, man. It's pretty wild. And I don't know exactly how it goes. Thank you, Curtis. I don't know exactly how this goes, but I imagine it's something like that she likes a nice, a gentle, over-solicitous Japanese estrogen-based boy band of a dude. And then when she goes off birth control, she views him as weak and simpy. That's tough, man. That's tough. Because, you know, everybody knows in women's literature, women's erotica, women's sex addict text or prose, that it's always some 6'6" billionaire werewolf, you know, some excessive Christian Grey, hyper-masculine guy with a helicopter, a leather whip, and the ability to play lease to the point where people cry when his fingers touch the ivories, which of course is an analogy for finding the G-spot. So if a woman, when she's actually trying to get impregnated by a guy, finds him repulsive, too simpy, too nice, too spineless, too beta, too whatever, it's like, ah, damn, that is a bad time for that to happen, man. That is like the worst, dare I say it? Yes, I dare say it. It's the worst conceivable time for this to happen. So, have you ever had this happen? This is a question for the men's and the ladies. Is have you ever had this happen to you? All right, so let's get to your questions and comments. Histocompatibility factor is what that's called, I believe. Yeah, I think, Kairos, I think you're right. I thought it might be that. Anecdotally, I didn't fancy the same men when I was on birth control, says this lady, yeah. $50 to get the dono train going. Owed you from the last show, so I'm still behind on my tithe schedule. Thank you, I appreciate that. Makes sense. In the 1970s, there were zero kids in my primary school with autism or allergies. Today, I've been told in Scottish schools, out of 320 children, 80 have emotional difficulties. But those are three different categories, right? Allergies, autism, and emotional difficulties. So that's a... But I certainly never heard of an autistic kid when I was growing up. I never even really heard of it. I certainly never knew kids. And I was, you know, I went to a bunch of different schools on a bunch of different continents. And I just never heard of an autistic kid. There was nothing like that around. I didn't know. I knew a couple of kids who had allergies, but, you know, the kind of pollen, you know, that kind of stuff, right? The more common sorts of allergies. But the peanut butter allergy was certainly not a thing when I was a kid. Now, what is the U.S. vaccine schedule up to? Is it 74 vaccines? That's mental. Absolutely mental. Well, we're going to see, right? We're going to see when Robert F. Kennedy Jr., like, he already sued to find out that the vaccines have not been tested against placebo and have never been tested in combination. You can't possibly test a combination of 74 medical interventions. You can't possibly test that in any way that would make any kind of sense. So it's going to be interesting to see. It's also interesting to see, you know, as the Doge Wunderkinds sail in from USAID to now, what are they in the IRS? Going to be interesting to see. Because what's really fascinating to me is Doge is like, hey, population, meet your sociopaths. Right? I mean, for 20 years, actually for even longer than 20 years, I've been talking about the state as your livestock to them, right? Your livestock to them. Just like whatever you can do to get your money, right? Or whatever they can do to get your money. Oh, do you care about foreign aid? Okay, we'll call it foreign aid. Whatever we do to get our hands on your money. So it's really interesting for me, since I've been talking about the sociopathy of people in power, particularly in political power, for like 40 plus years, it's really fascinating for me to see all of the people who are suddenly running into the fact and basic reality. All I want to say is that they don't really care about us. So, yeah, they don't. They're just like, oh, wait, hang on. Wait a second here. Is it the case that they don't really care about what we want and they just say stuff to have us give up money? Next up, global warming, right? It's wild. Somebody says, have dated someone who definitely had the histocompatibility thing like a perfect match. It's definitely different. They're like a drug apart from any other attractions. She described the same kind of experience about me many times. Yeah. Yeah, can't keep your hands off each other, right? A guy says, I find it curious that when my ex-wife was pregnant, she couldn't get an aspirin because it wasn't tested with pregnant women. Untested magic mystery juice. Great for kids. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that some of the manufacturers have said, we can't call it gene therapy, otherwise nobody's going to take it. There was no peanut allergy concerns in the 80s when I was a kid. I've often wondered where it came from. Well, this is the dysgenics of the welfare state. Yeah, it's, thank you, Matt. It's really rough. Now, I'm happy to, of course, take your questions and comments and issues and challenges, whatever is on your mind. I would like to make a case, though. I would like to make a case and tell me if it would be interesting to you. I would, you know, it is amazing. You've seen this, you know, the dog in the fiery chamber, right? This is fine, dog. You've seen that, right? So this was kind of going on around the last election in the U.S., right? The 2024 election, that, you know, the whole West was burning down, but the women were like, well, at least we have abortion. So would you like me to explain to you why so many women are so desperate to keep abortion rights? Would you like me to explain that to you? It's a little incomprehensible to men, I think, but I think I can talk about it in a way that makes sense so that you can understand why women are so pro access to abortion. Why they refer to it as the crazy name, you know, access to healthcare, right? Access to healthcare. Would you be interested in, I want to do stuff that's interesting to you, of course. Would you be interested in knowing why women are so pro abortion? All right. Well, so the reason why women are pro abortion is because of sexual addiction. Of sexual addiction. So, if the government could pass a law, so if you want to understand this as a man, if the government could pass a law that forced you to only be able to date women with a BMI of 35 or more, like women who are like, I don't know, 50, 75, 100 pounds overweight, sort of depending on their height. If the government could pass a law that said you could only date obese women, you could only have sex with obese women, you could only marry obese women, how important would it be for you that that law not get passed? You had to date not plump, not curvaceous, but overweight, really seriously obese women, right? How important that would be for you? Holy moly, I'd leave the country. 500%. Yeah, if you had to date truly fat women, if the government passed the law, said you can only date truly fat women, you would hit the roof. You would fight a tooth and nail, right? I might start a secession. Yeah. So because you would not, let's say that you're not a chubby chaser or whatever, right? So you would not be attracted to these women, and you would not want to have your sexual activities restricted to truly obese women. Is weight really that big a deal? Pull the ejection lever. Weight is absolutely a huge deal for men. Sorry, that's a woman who's saying, is weight really that big a deal? Weight is an absolutely huge deal for men. Yeah, weight is, if there's one thing that a man would want, absent all other things, it would be weight. Right. This is the one thing that men want more than anything else, is for a woman to not be obese. I mean, tell me if I'm wrong. Tell me if I'm wrong. Because that's, women can control that, right? She can't control her facial structure. She can't control some of the more details of fat distribution and so on. She can't control her height. You know, she can do a little bit to make her hair more attractive, but only so much. But she can absolutely control her weight. And obesity is the single biggest turnoff for men, right? Which is why the fat positivity thing is just part of the general depopulation agenda, right? Is to make women as unattractive as possible. So weight is the single biggest factor in a woman being attractive or unattractive, and there isn't even really a close second, right? Like the obesity thing is like right at the top and somewhere, you know, like significantly down. Is some other factor, right? But it is obesity. No question. No real second, no debate whatsoever. Now, of course, why would a man not be attracted to an obese woman? And listen, I have sympathy with the obesity. You know, of course, you could have grown up with your children, with your parents overfeeding you. You might have grown up in a dangerous neighborhood where it was tough to walk and you couldn't get access to a gym. It might have been a rough school where you had to run away because, right, the it was dangerous, the bullies and so on, right? So I'm, this is not any condemnation, not any particular criticism, because there's lots of reasons why someone, in this case woman, might be obese. And I say this with great and deep sympathy, but facts are facts, right? A man is not going to be attracted in general to an obese woman for a variety of reasons. One, it's harder for her to get pregnant. It's harder for her to bring a baby to term. It's harder for her to have a successful and healthy baby. And it's harder for her to clean her body, depending on the level of obesity. It is, she is going to be more at risk of dying in childbirth. She's going to be more at risk of dying in general. She's going to have joint issues. She's going to have hip issues. She's going to have, you know, chronic pain is a big thing. And diabetes is a big thing. Early death is a big thing. So it's just, it's a really, really bad deal for men to get with obese women, right? And of course, it is a weight, you know, like tons of exceptions, but the higher the weight, on average, the lower the IQ. The higher the weight, the lower the IQ. And so lower IQ is more likely to be difficult, volatile, obstructive, to act out, no particular third eye, no particular sense of external morality, and so on. So lower IQ is harder to negotiate with. It's harder to have a productive and healthy relationship with, and so on, right? So it's a bad deal for men. It's a bad deal for men. And of course, a woman who is obese is, and I talk about this in Peaceful Parenting, is much more likely to give birth to obese children and have the children more likely to be obese, right? So it's bad. It's bad all around. It's just bad all around. And of course, if you have, let's say you have an obese daughter, then your obese daughter is less likely to be able to attract a wealthy man, which means your children are going to have fewer resources. So it's just bad. It's just bad as a whole. And of course, since 1960, the average weight of men and women in the U.S. rose nearly 20%. It's crazy. And some of that's going to be aging, for sure. It's just an aging population and so on. But it's really bad all around. Although even when you age segregate it, it's still higher, right? So men between the ages of 40 and 49 were nearly 27 pounds heavier on average in 2002 compared with 1960. Men between the ages of 50 and 59 were nearly 28 pounds heavier on average in 2002 compared to 1960. Men between the ages of 60 and 74 were almost 33 pounds heavier on average. That's rough, man. That is really rough on the joints and rough on the heart and so on, right? And men have gained a little bit less weight than women have gained. So, percentage-wise, not in terms of absolute terms. But yeah, it's really bad. It's really bad. All right, let me just get to your comments and move on. All right, move on that. It's a sign of being healthy to me. Yeah, no self-respect. Yeah. Willpower and so on, right? If a woman can't restrain herself from eating too much, will she be able to restrain herself from having an affair? Will she be able to restrain herself from yelling at the children? Will she be able to restrain herself from continuing to gain weight? Because a man who marries a woman who's already obese, what happens after she has three children? She's not going to make it. I mean, our sort of evolutionarily speaking. If a woman can't restrain herself from having extra cheesecake and cookies and chips and chocolate or whatever her weakness is, will she be able to restrain herself from yelling at you, from raging at you, from nagging you, right? A man looks for self-restraint in a woman, and the biggest marker of self-restraint, before you get to know the person, the biggest marker of self-restraint is your weight, right? So, as a man, Steph, after the show, come join us from some Diablo 2 Resurrected. Boy, that's a whale. That's a ways back. So, why am I talking about men and obesity? So, if there was a law passed that said you could only date and have sex with women who had a BMI of 35 or 40, you would really freak out because that would be the death of your sexual excitement, the death of your sexual interest, and you would have to lower your standards considerably for the attractiveness level. I know, I'm going to tie it in, man. Just give me a sec. So as a man, you would really have to lower your standards and you would not be able to have sex with nearly or date nearly as attractive a woman if this particular law passed. And so this is for men to understand this. You have to date really, really fat women. Now, let's look at why women have such a tough time with letting go of abortion. Because casual sex allows women to date men far more attractive than otherwise. Say this again, brothers. Say it with me, brothers and sisters. The ability to offer casual sex to men allows women to have sex with far more attractive men than they would otherwise. In other words, if every time a man has sex with a woman, he risks being tied to her permanently because of getting her pregnant, then he is going to change his standards considerably. Now, man to man. Can we just talk man to man? Can we just talk man to man? Man to man. What percentage of women you've slept with over the course of your life, what percentage of women you've slept with would you have refrained from sleeping with if there was a significant chance you'd be tied to her forever through pregnancy and childbirth? What percentage of the women you've slept with would you have refrained from sleeping with if you knew there was a significant possibility you'd be tied to her forever? 100%. Well, it's high, right? It's high. If birth control was not on the table, whatever form you want, doesn't really matter. If birth control was not on the table for men, you would have to be way more picky about who you slept with. Right? 100%, 50%, 99%, all except one. Yeah, that's the same with me too. I'm already afraid of that. Don't risk it. Right? All of them. Yeah. So I assume that the men in this chat, I mean, you're obviously very intelligent. If you follow the muscular philosophy exercise stuff that I talk about and put out, I assume that you're relatively trim and healthy and so on. So women who can offer you sex with no risk of babies, get access to you as an attractive man much more often, and in some cases, it wouldn't be possible otherwise. So abortion comes out of sex addiction. To want, for the women to want to have sex with far more attractive men than they otherwise would be able to because they can offer consequence-free sexual activity. Women get access to far more attractive men than they would otherwise. And they get addicted to chat with abs. So think of some spring break situation, right? There's some woman, she's not particularly attractive, but she can have sex on a beach with a guy who's a 9 or a 10 because he's not worried about her getting pregnant, having to keep the baby, shotgun marriage, child support, whatever it's going to be. So because women want to have sex with the most attractive men possible, and consequence-free sexual activity is the greatest subsidy a woman can provide a man. It's the greatest subsidy. There's no bigger subsidy. Because men don't really care about women's money, right? We don't care about their family connections. We don't care if their father can get us a job. We don't care about any of that. There is no bigger subsidy that a woman can give a man than consequence-free sex. So it comes out of a form of sexual addiction. Because if abortion is off the table, women can only have sex with less attractive men. That is an absolute domino equation. If abortion is taken off the table, then every man is going to be concerned about sexual activity leading to a baby. And so women will have to readjust their calibration of male attractiveness to match their own. Tell me if you're following the argument. I'm sorry to sound condescending. Hit me with a why. I don't want to over-explain. I don't want to under-explain. Now, a woman wants to feel maximally attractive, right? There's nothing sexier for a woman than feeling that she's got a fantastic dress on, she's walking through the hotel lobby, eyes are following her. That's very sexy for a woman. It's actually kind of the opening of my novel, The Present, which you should definitely check out. freedomain.com/books. So a woman feels as sexy as the attractiveness of the man she's able to get. So a woman does not measure herself against some, you know, the 1 to 10 scale, right? She does not measure herself in some objective way. She measures herself by the attractiveness of the men who will sleep with her or pursue her even if she doesn't sleep around or whatever, right? So if a woman can get an 8 or a 9 to sleep with her or pursue her for sex, she genuinely feels like an 8 or a 9 or a 10. So women, of course, want to feel as attractive as possible. Yeah, we'll get to the alpha widow. That's not unrelated. So the woman wants to feel as attractive as possible because that makes her feel sexy and that gives her, she gets a high. She gets dopamine. She gets a flood of happy joy juice hormones when attractive men pursue her. So a woman who is a 6 can get a 9 or a 10 to sleep with her. And then she feels like a 9 or a 10. And then she looks at men who are 6 with contempt. So a woman who is a 6 can get a 9 or a 10 to sleep with her, and therefore she feels that she's a 9 or a 10. And then she looks at the range she should be looking at, a 5 to a 7. She looks at them with contempt and disgust, and she finds it insulting if they ask her out. How dare you imagine that a woman like me would ever, ever get together with a guy like you? Right? So you've seen these, what's it, the whatever podcast and so on, where they say, oh, how attractive are you? And the women in general will say, like, I'm a 10, everyone's a 10, right? Because they feel that way, because they can get very attractive guys to sleep with them, and therefore they think that that is their level of attractiveness. That makes sense? So, if abortion is taken off the table, a 6 will no longer be able to sleep with a 9 or a 10, in general. Now, if abortion is taken off the table, the subsidy, the sexual subsidy that gets you 3 or 4 points up in the dating hierarchy collapses, and a woman will be returned to her actual number of attractiveness because she will not have a subsidy. Like for a man, you say, oh, gee, you know, I'm a podcaster, as someone might say. I'm a podcaster and I'm a business genius. And it turns out they were getting $1 million or $2 million or $5 million from the government, right? Getting all this money from the government, It's a massive subsidy. Now, why is it that people who genuinely think that they're brilliant and amazing and wonderful and so on, when they're getting heavily pumped up and subsidized by the regime, by the algorithm, by whatever, right? Now, if you say to these people, we're going to return you to the free market, no more subsidies. No more subsidies. No more free sex. No more ass on the table. No more consequence-free clanging and banging. No more if the vans are rocking, don't come a knocking. You will not be able to subsidize your sex life with consequence-free orgasms. Woof! Let's return you to the free market without the subsidy of sex. Now, Christian women, unless obviously generally Christian women tend to be pro-life rather than pro-choice, because they're looking for qualities of character for the purpose of raising children. Whereas women on the left in general are looking for orgasms with the most attractive man, and if the babies have to be sacrificed on the altar of female lust and vanity, so be it. Because that's an addiction. So women, I think, again, this is not all women, tons of exceptions, but women in general understand that if you take away abortion, you are taking away the Chad subsidy. You are taking away the himflation that allows them to pump up 3 or 4 or even 5 sexy points. If a woman can no longer subsidize male attraction with easy, consequence-free sex, then she is going to have to be chosen for what? Why would a man choose to date, get engaged, get married to a woman if she cannot offer him in the early stages of courtship consequence-free sex? What happens? What's she going to have to be judged by? I dream of a day when all women are judged not by the contents of their cooch, but the contents of their character. There's your gif. They'll have to be judged by the content of their character. They'll have to be judged by their virtues, their values, their helpfulness, their support. Yeah. She will have to be a good woman who provides practical, tangible value to a man. She will no longer be subsidized by the demon seed of empty lust. And her willingness to not cheat, and her loyalty, her virtue, her relative lack of body count. See, for sexual addicts, experience is a positive because they'll often do more freaky, skilled, and crazy shit in bed, right? In the same way that if you are a gambling addict, the more experienced someone is in gambling who's helping you, the better, right? Because they kind of know what they're doing and they know how to help you win. Which is why the debate about body count is incomprehensible to either side. Because on the right, body count is bad because it indicates an erosion of the capacity to pair bond and a lack of self-respect and sexual addiction. Whereas on the left, it's like, well, why wouldn't you want to have sex with someone who was more skilled and freaky? Because the people on the right are interviewing for pair bonding and the raising of children, and the people on the left are interviewing for freaky skills in strange Kama Sutra rituals between the sheets, or in an elevator, or in the woods. Well, not in the woods. Leftists don't really go in the woods. On the gritty tarmac on the top of an apartment building. So if you're interviewing someone for their skills, you want them to have more skills. I have been coding for 20 years, okay? I've been having lots of sex with lots of people for 20 years, so you're going to be more skilled and freaky. So that's a plus. The body count is a plus if it's orgasms and freakiness that you're after rather than a quality wife, helpmate, companion, and mother for your children. You don't care about pair bonding. You care about how she massages the prostate and has your armpits orgasm, or I don't know what the hell goes on. It's been a while since I've been on the open market. I don't know what the hell goes on, but some freaky shit goes down. Do you know how to choke in the right way? Yeah, robes, oils, and shag carpet for the left. Right. Right. Because on the left, they're not trying to found families. They're hiring for porn shoots. So if you are addicted to the vanity of your only happiness comes from orgasms, and the more attractive the man, the better the orgasm, and the better you feel about yourself from a I'm sexy and desirable standpoint, then abortion cuts off that dopamine. And we all know how addicts react when the supply goes dry. Right. I mean, I remember when COVID hit and, you know, everything was closed except the liquor stores and beer stores were still open. It's like, what the hell's that? And people were saying, well, no, you're a real addict. You're a real alcoholic. You can't get your alcohol, man. You might stroke out and die or whatever the hell. DTs are horrible. When the addict can't get his or her supply, in this case, it's her supply, they absolutely lose their shit. Thank you for the tip. Yeah, we had 10 bucks so far tonight, so if you could help me out, I'd like to think that I make more than I did when I was 12 years old. That would be nice. That would be nice. So, for women, losing access to abortion is returning to an unsubsidized free market of attractiveness. And it is very, very, very hard for women, people as a whole, we're just talking about women at the moment, it's very hard to lose 50% of your value and to no longer have access to the top tier of men and to have to settle with some local dingy guy with a pot belly and a neck beard because that's your level of attractiveness. That's tough, man. I mean, okay, so men or women here in the chat, have you ever had to do a big downgrade in your life? Like, have you ever gone from like some big highfalutin position to working as a waiter? Or have you ever had to do, maybe if you moved countries or had to learn a language, like, have you ever had to have a really big downgrade in your life? And tell me a little bit about that. As somebody says, I've always thought, as the woman here, she says, I've always thought the number of partners equals skilled seems like an odd argument. It's like having 30 jobs versus one job for 10 years. Maybe they're just really bad at it and no one wants to give them a second go. That's not really how it works though. Like if you're a salesman, then the more industries you've worked in and the more, the higher variety of customers you've worked with, the better. Right. If you're a salesman and you say, well, my dad made me a salesman and I've had the same one customer for 20 years. Nobody wants to hire you as a salesman, right? Because you don't have any experience and it's all subsidized and nepotism and all that kind of stuff, right? Yes, I've had a smidge of a downgrade. Not that I want to talk about you guys being a downgrade, but, you know, obviously I went from very much being at the center of whatever you want to call it, alt tech, to a smidge on the periphery. But yeah, I've had some downgrades from time to time over the course of my life and so on. And if you have a downgrade, man, it's tough. It's tough. It eats away at you. It's, you know, you have to really recalibrate. It burns, and you want to, claw your way back up again, right? Claw your way back up as quickly as humanly possible. So, I mean, if you've ever had addict friends, or you yourself have been an addict like this, you're a drinker and your friends all drink, then when you quit drinking, often you have to flounder around to find some new social group because you're probably not going to be that welcome in your drinking group if you're not drinking anymore, right? Because they want to be drinking people, and so you're going to have to find something else, right? It's rough. Somebody says, fired for not masking in COVID, rebuilding my IT empire, which is why I will drink their tears. Yeah. Somebody says, I was an assistant manager for senior disabled public housing building. It was an upgrade from working 3 to 4 jobs, but after a few months in, it didn't feel right. And I went back to lower pay work. I didn't like that I was helping the government. Okay, but that's for reasons of integrity, and that's certainly respectable. But if you've ever just had a big downgrade, it's rough. And of course, that's why downgrades are kind of a punishment. If you ever held back in school, you know, you're like the guy in grade 6 with the beard. That's rough, man. That's rough. So to say to women, you can no longer subsidize the men you have access to with consequence-free sex, you're going to have to win men with the quality of your character. Well, developing the quality of a character sucks a lot more than a blowjob. It's going to be on my tombstone, right? Blowjobs, orgasm, sex, whatever, easy, fun, you know, becoming a quality person who adds real value to another human being's existence. That's tough, man. That's really tough. I mean, guys go through this in things like crypto, right? You don't need that bullshit, right? So guys go through this in terms of crypto. So you can, you know, lose a bunch of money in crypto, and then you gotta rebuild if you're in some altcoin bullshit, right? So if you voluntarily choose, as you say, to downgrade, that's a different matter, because that's an integrity thing, right? But it's the old thing, like, if you want to be happy and you go out and do good in the world, you take on evildoers, you promote virtue, well, you know, masturbation will give you an orgasm and make you feel good for a little while. And that's a whole lot easier than going out, developing skills, and providing virtue and value in the world as a whole. Most women don't seem to like men very much. Well, there's some truth in that. But if you're heavily subsidized and in a protected industry, you don't really like your customers. It's not like the, you know, when you go to the Department of Motor Vehicles, they're like, hey, good to see you. Come on in. We're so happy you're here. They're not that. You're an annoyance and an irritation as a whole, right? I mean, you go, if you some restaurant, you know, you go to on a regular basis. Hey, coming in. We got to see you. Your table's ready for you. Chef's going to come out and say hi. We're so happy you're here, right? Because that's a free market, right? But if you're in a protected, subsidized industry or a monopoly industry from the state, so those you prey upon, you cannot have empathy for. And never underestimate the degree to which, men do this too, but never underestimate the degree to which women like showing off a picture of their date to their female friends. Oh my God, he's so hot. Oh my God, look at those eyes. Oh, what a, oh, I'm so jealous. Oh, you're so lucky. And people who are addicted to unreality fight tooth and bloody nail to avoid and dismantle a return to reality. And those who are heavily subsidized, you can see this happening with USAID and other things at the moment, those who are heavily subsidized fight the free market like hell, because they have power, prestige, and status and income from subsidies and falsehoods. So somebody had mentioned the alpha widow phenomenon. Hit me with an N if you don't know what the alpha widow phenomenon refers to. That's just an N. Somebody says, being one of the few men in a female-dominated space is bad if, when, one, you don't seek them sexually, two, you don't flirt in ways that can backfire with HR complaints. It can be quite dreadful clocking in. Yeah, it's a bitter tweet today. 45% of men 25 and under have never asked a woman out in person. And people are like, well, we solved the whole sexual harassment thing, but at what cost? But at what cost? Women are brutally cynical sometimes. Brutally cynical. Tools of the trade, right? The makeup store is called Tools of the Trade. And I remember many years ago working at a restaurant. And the female waiters, I wasn't working. I was at a coffee shop and there were all these women behind. And I remember hearing, because I was working on a book and I had headphones on, but I could still hear the women chatting. And the women are all like, ugh, tips suck today. Call up so-and-so and get her to come over here with her low-cut tops. Because, you know, apparently she was rather top-heavy. And, you know, that way we can get some tips. Like, just it's women, but it's very cynical and they can be kind of brutal and cold, right? You know, the old saying, I don't know how true it is, but the old saying that men are in love, women are in business. Being one of the few women in a male dominated space, however, is lovely.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. So the alpha widow phenomenon is something like this. So the alpha widow phenomenon is a woman, let's say she's a six and she can date for short-term relationships, guys who are eight, nines, and tens. Let's just say the six can date the nine. And so she throws out a lot of hypersexual signals. She talks a lot about sex and low-cut tops. And so she, in a sense, bypasses the male judgment with sexual stimulation of a visual kind, right? Low-cut tops and lots of lipstick, the orgasm, kabuki, Hello Kitty face. And so she is hijacking a man's thinking by activating the penis, right? And so because of that, his judgment goes down. He's in a state of semi-perpetual arousal, and therefore his cognitive faculties, his judgment, his standards kind of collapse because he has access to sex. And so, right. So it's a form of love bombing, right? And so the six can have short-term relationships with the nine. And this is the general female paranoia about what do you do in the morning, right? What do you do in the morning? Right? There's a whole Anna Faris, I don't remember the movie, but she gets up and she's got to put on all her makeup and then she goes back to bed and she pretends she wakes up that way, right? We told about it, the wolf sex. I talked about that before. You chew your own arm off rather than wake the woman up. So it's a situation where the woman can sleep at the man because he's, you know, it's late. She's been putting out sexual signals all night. Maybe he's a little drunk, but the beer goggles on, right? And so she can have sex with the man and she might even get a short-term relationship out of it. But at some point, the man looks over and says, now, or of course, live by the sword, die by the cord. And so what happens is he's sexually sated with her, but then some other woman comes along with a low-cut top, maybe a nice figure, sexual signals, is all over him, ha ha ha, laughs at her and flips her hair, whatever they do these days. And so he then will leave the six and go, maybe it's another six, maybe it's a seven or whatever, but he will then drift because the women are all just disabling his neofrontal cortex by appealing to his libido, his base of the brain, medulla stuff. And so he just drifts from one night stand to short-term commitment to, you know, and he just kind of drifts off, he ghosts and so on. So the alpha widow is the woman, and it's very common and often is the breeding ground for feminism, right? So the alpha widow is the woman who can, she's a six, she can get the nine to sleep with her. Maybe she can get a couple of weeks or maybe even a couple of months out of it, but he drifts on because she's, you know, sexuality, you know, it, right? You know, that old saying, no matter how beautiful the woman is, no matter how sexy is, there's someone somewhere who's tired of having sex with her, right? Because if it's just about sex, it gets depressing because it's animalistic. It's not anything elevated. It's not about virtue. It's not about love. It's not about respect. It's just about, you know, fluid discharge. You know, it turns into dentistry. You know, they put that thing in your mouth that seems to suck, but basically just drip things in the back of your throat until you cough and feel like you're going to lose a tooth because they're scraping something that goes back to three generations of ancestry. Don't swallow, right? So, a lot of sexual jokes here. So, it's just fluid discharge, right? Just orgasms and, you know, the sex and the orgasm, you have 20 minutes or whatever, right? And then you've got, you know, a lot of time together and you're just not, like once the sexual frisson wears off, then he's going to drift on to somebody else, right? And then after a certain number of this, could be, you know, 3, 5, 7, 9, 12, whatever. After a certain number of this, she then has a problem that men won't commit to her. And the reason men won't commit to her is because she's subsidizing with sex and that subsidy, the effect wears off and then some other new woman wants to subsidize with sex, so he'll drift off in that direction. Or he just finds that he doesn't really particularly enjoy her company because she doesn't have much to talk about. She doesn't have any thoughts or virtues or ideas or anything like that. She's not much of a conversationalist and he just gets tired of the sex. And it gets depressing. Like, I don't know if you've ever been in that situation, but it's just depressing. Like, what am I doing here? This is like, you sort of wake up as a man, post-nut clarity, and you sort of look around at this messy apartment and trashy novels on the wall and Taylor Swift posters. And it's like, what am I doing here? This is really depressing. It's really, and then you just drift off, right? And so the woman is like, well, I can get the men will sleep with me, but they won't commit to me. And so rather than say, I am not providing enough value to keep the men, she then drifts towards the theories that men are commitment phobic. Men just, they won't commit. They won't grow up. They're terrified of a real woman. They're intimidated by my intelligence and my money and my success, whatever it is, right? It's all just cope and nonsense, right? It's all complete scabby cope and nonsense. I mean, it's like if there's some guy who fakes his way into various jobs and then keeps getting fired, does he say, you know, like employers just really phobic of commitment. They just won't commit to an employee. It's like, well, you're faking it. So the alpha widow is the woman who, at the height of her sexuality, the height of her sexual displays and which are chosen, then she can get a lot of, quote, high quality or sexy or chadly men to sleep with her. She can't ever get them to commit to her because basically all she's offering is sex and there's a newer model coming along all the time. And then rather than say, well, I've clearly been shooting above my league and I need to, if I want an alpha, I have to find some way to provide real value to him, right? Now, providing real value to an alpha is not easy. So let's sort of take the typical Chad alpha, right? So the typical Chad alpha comes from a upper middle class or even higher, a family, you know, he's privileged in many ways. He's attractive because his parents are attractive and attractive people tend to be more successful in the world as a whole. So he probably comes, if he gets his looks from his mother, then it means that his mother was attractive enough to get an alpha male to not just have sex with her, but to commit, marry, right? So there's a certain amount of class that the woman is going to need because the young man, let's say he's destined to be a lawyer or a doctor or business executive or something like that. Well, she's going to need to be presentable to his colleagues because a man is going to be judged to some degree by his wife. So she's going to need to be comfortable in at the opera in formal wear. She's going to need to know how to relate to people who are very successful. She's going to need to be an asset to him in this kind of way. And, you know, a six who's not particularly stand out in any particular way and who maybe comes from not a great family or elevated family, who hasn't grown up in the same class or at least isn't willing to learn all of that kind of stuff. But some My Fair Lady stuff, right? The rain in Spain falls mainly on the plan, right? So he's going to have to, like, you can't take the average six who is coming from a lower middle class family, but who may have the gift of the fat deposits in the right place, she's really sexy. You just can't turn her into someone that you can introduce to your boss and have your boss be really impressed. Because she's going to need to have a certain grace to her, a certain look to her. She's going to have, you know, like the sort of, maybe not the giant, the giant breast peasant figure, but the sort of small aristocratic figure. And she's going to need to know what to say. She might even need the right accent. She's going to need to know all of this stuff. And I mean, when I was in the business world and I was dating women, they would be pretty nervous when they would meet my boss. My wife was very comfortable and very charming and was a great asset. Great asset. And all of that. So you really kind of notice these differences. So if a woman wants an alpha, then she's going to need to study upper middle class and above culture. She's going to need to adapt. She's going to need to figure out how to add value to him or add to his status. Because if she's even a little bit on the trashy side or a little bit on the not high class side, it's going to be a disaster. He's not going to marry her. And, you know, the alpha's father is going to say to her, look, she's fine for a weekend, maybe even a month, but it's not the kind of girl you marry. Like, but no. He's going to be very, very clear about that. If that makes sense. So let's see here. Very interesting. Definitely explains the lack of character value virtues I have noticed. Thanks for explaining this, Steph. More concise than a 7-hour whatever podcast. I'd be able to donate more at the end of the month. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. I don't think I've heard of Alison Armstrong. Okay, so the alpha widow is the woman who gets into her late 20s and her early 30s, and she has a series. So she has programmed herself to only respond to the top 10% of male attractiveness. Remember, 90% of men are rated unattractive by men. So a woman who is an alpha widow is someone who she's in her late 20s, early 30s, maybe even mid-30s, and she has had a series of relationships with men way out of her league. And then she's in trouble because the alphas are no longer interested in her because she's got that air of early 30s, mid 30s desperation and so on, right? And so, and they're interested in younger women because they're alphas, right? So even if they're in their early 30s, they're going to be interested in women in their early mid 20s and so on who are free and footloose and fancy free. So the alpha widow is the woman who has, through sexual subsidies, programmed her entire sexual response mechanism to only respond to the top tier of men who now ignore her. Welcome to the desert of the real, right? She's programmed her entire system to only respond to men who no longer are interested in her. That's the alpha widow. What does she do? I mean, the typical answer is she dips down to marry some simp who's been around, who she's kept on deck for a while. She marries him, and then she finds herself, particularly if she goes off birth control, she'll then find herself unattracted to him, and she'll just take all of her, she'll divorce him, take all of his stuff, and bang the pool boy until even that becomes impossible. And right. Yeah, pretty woman does not happen. Absolutely not. No, that's a complete fantasy. And that fantasy is designed to appeal to women with a past, right? That you can be trashy, slutty, be a literal prostitute, and the man will defend your honor, even though his friends are making fun. I mean, this is the old thing. Like, imagine, this is sort of take an extreme example, just to sort of drive the point home. I mean, imagine if some guy is a partner in a law firm, married a woman, and then it turns out that she was an OnlyFans online sex worker, right? She did hardcore sex with groups or like whatever trashy stuff would be going on. And you know this vetting is going to happen. You know this vetting is going to happen. I mean, men of means are not going to get married to women without background checks. And the background check could be as a sort of Google search or reverse image search or something like that. There are even apps now. If you've got a girlfriend, there are apps that will check whether she's on active on any other dating sites. So women have this fantasy that they can escape their past. This is the, you absolutely have to watch A Streetcar Named Desire. So women have this fantasy that they can escape their past, which is completely impossible now. Completely impossible now. A quality man, a man of status, and equality just means desirable to women. Doesn't necessarily mean like moral qualities and so on. So, It's killer. All right. Freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. Really would appreciate that. I think we got the entirety of sexual market dynamics with abortion and alpha widows done in less than 40 minutes. I think it's pretty good. I think that's pretty good. All right. She's bitter. Then she's bitter to even look at you. You're on a speed date or a blind date. Yeah. Well, and again, is this true of women? Maybe a little bit more. But the idea that a woman, when she's in her 30s and she can't get the attention of the top tier of men, that she would sit there and say, well, I guess I have a sexual addiction to physically attractive or high status men. I have a sexual addiction to high status men, and I broke a lot of hearts along the way because I rejected men on my level and went after these alphas and subsidized things with sex, which is a terrible thing to do. It's my fault. No. No, I mean, there was a debate with some woman, a med student, I think, or someone who was aiming to be a doctor, some woman, and Pearl, Pearly Things, H. Pearl Davis. And Pearl Davis was talking about like, okay, well, what about the miner, like some coal miner and so on, right? And the other woman was like, well, but who set up that system? You know, like some coal miner in Liverpool in the, you know, 18th century set up the system where he's stuck being a coal miner, right? So for women, you know, this, and this is a fairly common observation, but for women, the reason they think that there's a patriarchy that all men are involved in is they only look at the top 10% of men who do actually have some power and authority, and they don't even notice everyone else. So this woman who debated with Pearl genuinely seems to think that the poor, broke, half-serf coal miner who's going to die of black lung at the age of 45 set up the system, because she only looks at the top tier of men who do have some influence on the system and thinks that's all men, right? So the reason that women believe in the patriarchy is they only look at the top 5 or 10% of men in terms of power, authority, wealth, and status, and the other men don't even exist to them. So they think that all men are privileged because the men who aren't privileged, who aren't in the top 90% of men, don't even exist in their minds. And this is the woman who said, the woman who's debating with, I don't remember her name. She was talking about how, like, I like to see nuance and I like to do this and that and the other. And then when she's talking about, when the coal miner comes up, like the guy who's dying of black lung and stuck down a coal mine for 14 hours a day or 16 hours a day. And the woman's just like, why don't you just get another job? Because that's all the nuance they can handle. Just get another job. All right. Steph, do you think it's likely to have a successful relationship with a lady if there's a noticeable difference of IQ, but she's conscientious and virtuous? Well, the problem is you're really rolling the dice in terms of the kid's intelligence, right? So siblings can have an 8 to 10 IQ point difference on average. So even with two smart parents, there can be quite a variety in IQ as a whole. And frankly, I think wisdom is even wider. So the problem is if you have a bunch of kids with a, let's say, a woman who's not particularly intelligent, let's say you have an IQ of 130 and she's like 90, your kids are going to be scattered around. So it's going to be kind of unfair because some of the kids are going to be way closer to her and kind of not comprehensible to you because they're not very intelligent. Some of the other kids, the mother won't understand or be able to appreciate, and they'll be much closer to you. So it's really going to separate the siblings as a whole because you're taking that general roll of the dice sibling stuff and adding in a 2+ standard deviation. So I would say probably not. And plus, you know, I mean, marriage is just conversation. And, you know, you start cooking around 2 standard deviation points of difference. There's really not much to talk about. And I mean, I know this really deeply because I grew up in a very poor neighborhood, very sort of trashy neighborhood full of people who were not smart at all. I worked in a lot of industries without smart people and had to spend a lot of time moving through the world with people of IQs of 85, 90, 95. And, you know, I can pass the time. It's not the end of the world, but there is not a... there is no capacity to sustain any type of conversation because depth is generally impossible. Other than in a mystical religious sense, depth is impossible for people of lower IQ. They don't have an observing ego. They can't compare proposed actions to ideal standards. They can follow rules, which is sort of the Ten Commandments stuff, but it's not going to have much in common. I mean, the fact that my wife is, to me, like absolutely brilliant, and she is just incredibly fast at what she processes and grasps and suggests. It's a glorious thing. All right, so what else we have? If Doge succeeds, won't Bitcoin's utility decrease as a hedge against inflation? Sorry, I don't mean to laugh. I don't. So Doge, okay. You got a $15 trillion economy as a whole, and you have well north of $200 trillion of unfunded liabilities. Doge, all Doge can do, and I think it's great what they're doing, and no issues with that, right? But all Doge can do is extend the runway so that Bitcoin can be more widely adopted. Doge cannot solve the problem. And remember, a significant proportion in the majority of American government spending is mandated. It is not open to review. It is not open to cuts. So, it will help for sure, but the real purpose of Doge is to expose the coldness and predation of the political class, particularly on the left, though it's certainly, and the other thing about Doge and Elon and Trump as a whole is to absolutely highlight how unbelievably fucking cucked the Republican Party has been forever and ever. Amen. How unbelievably spineless and cucked. Everything that they're doing was completely and totally available to any Republican in the past 70 years or more. 1948 was the last time an American president had access to the government's payment systems. So this is why, you know, I never referred to myself as a Republican or a conservative in that way, because they were just so unbelievably cucked. Everything that they're doing could have been done by Paul Ryan, could have been done by Mitch McConnell, could have been done by Newt Gingrich, could have been done by Ronald Reagan, everything. I mean, this ultimate controlled opposition. All right. My husband is really smart and was adopted. His adoptive family really struggled raising him. They described him as a nightmare. Everybody needs to be humbled in order to stay sane. And for intelligent people, we recognize that humbling as something that is good and healthy for us, right? So I'll regularly dip into things I'm not particularly good at just to stay humble. And when you, the lower the IQ, in generally, the lower the IQ, the higher the vanity, right? The lower the IQ, the higher the vanity, which is why, you know, often low IQ people will praise themselves to the skies and be like, I'm the greatest, you know, and sort of World Wrestling Federation kind of, me best nonsense, right? And so humility is a mark of intelligence, because when you're good at something, you recognize all the things you're not great at. You know, like I'm humbled by, you know, I have callers who English is not their first or their native tongue. And they're like, oh, I'm sorry for the accent. I'm like, no, man. Like, and you've heard me say this on call-in shows, like anybody who can learn to some degree of fluency another language is incredible. I mean, it's amazing to me because I'm not good at like great computer. I know 17 different computer languages. I'm not good at learning. Like I had to learn how to translate French live in an exam for my graduate degree in history, sort of history of philosophy stuff. I had to learn how to translate French. I took course for like 18 months just to do that. It's really, it does not come naturally to me in the same way that math, my wife is brilliant at math and loves math, apple polisher, but it's not my particular thing. So there's stuff that I'm good at. And if you ever want to be humbled, try and help your daughter with her homework, particularly the math area, right? So yeah, especially enough to do philosophy in a second language or emotional self-expression. I just think it's amazing, and I'm really impressed by that. Like Melania speaks like what? Melania Trump, 4 or 5 languages fluently. Amazing. Incredible. So Richard Burton, not the actor, but the old explorer, spoke like 22 languages or 17 languages or something like that. I just think that's incredible. It's not the way my brain works. I look, because I'm so good at English, I look at another language and I think, my God, the amount, like 10,000 hours to become good at it, it's exhausting and depressing to even think about it, right? So when people of average intelligence, they often think they're much smarter than they are, Dunning-Kruger, right? So then when they encounter somebody who's really smart, they feel humbled, right? You know, like I was the best actor by far in my university. I was always cast the lead in everything. I went to the National Theatre School and I was like, yeah, I'm good. You know, I'm not bad, relative, but they were all fantastic, right? So it's humbling. If you happen to be, you know, the best karaoke singer in a tiny town, and then you go to some pub near Broadway where the actors are having fun afterwards, you're like, oh, okay, well, they're really good. It's kind of humbling, right? All right. Steph, why is the left so upset that Elon gave a press conference with his toddler? Well, because if the left is about short-term sensual stimulation, of which rage seems to be one of their favorites, right? And a study just came out that sort of liberal women are the most bitter and unhappy, right? Which is what happens when you chase dopamine rather than virtue for your happiness. So for there to be children around, right, to have a man have sex with you is the easiest, laziest thing in the world. To have a man commit to you, provide for you, and love you as a mother to his children is a whole other thing, right? Your whole is where you aren't, right? Whereas your virtues is where you are the most. How did Ayn Rand write so well in English when she was from Russia? Well, that's another absolutely a brilliant thing that she does not get nearly enough credit for, that she wrote one of the most influential books in English, which she only started to learn in her late teens. Incredible. Absolutely amazing. It's funny to think, of course, that Atlas Shrugged and We the Living and Anthem and The Fountainhead are all translated into Russian. It's kind of funny, right? All right, any other last questions or comments, issues, challenges? I'm certainly happy to hear what is on your mind, if there's anything else I can help you with. A couple of reminders, freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. You can go to freedomain.com/call if you would like to book a call-in show, public or private. I'm a little booked up for a while, but this stuff opens up sometimes. So, but Steph, Alison Armstrong is who I picture when you talk about good women. I just finished her book, The Amazing Development of Men. You're now beginning my novel, The Present. Keep up the good work. I'm glad you caught this live. Well, thank you very much for your tips, Joe. And I really do. I will make a note of that because I'm looking for, always on the lookout for good books. Always on the lookout for good books. It's going once, going a twice, or whatever might be on your mind. I'm thrilled to get your thoughts. If you have questions or comments, of course, you can always email me, host@freedomain.com. All right. Thanks, everyone. Have a beautiful, glorious night. We will see you 11 a.m. on Sunday. And don't forget, fdrurl.com/locals. You can sign up. Wonderful community. Great posts. Even a marriage came out of it. No, two. And you can get access to all the AIs and all this great stuff with all of your donations and support, particularly subscriptions. And you get all of the great premium podcasts and call-in shows. Thank you, everybody. Have a glorious night. Lots of love from up here. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.